Hello and welcome to the Be Your Own Healer Telesummit. I'm Jonathan Fitzgordon, your host and founder of Core Walking. I'm here today speaking with Jill Miller. Jill is a yoga and fitness therapy expert with over 26 years of experience and the creator and founder of Yoga Tune-Up. She created her groundbreaking format, Yoga Tune-Up, as a supportive modality for self-healing that attracts students at every age and stage of life. Jill is currently finishing work on her first book and is also taking care of her first child, who was very recently born. So I truly appreciate her taking the time to talk with us today. Jill, thanks so much for being here.
Jonathan, thank you so much for reaching out and including me in this amazing, amazing seminar.
Oh, my pleasure. We have lots of people in common. A lot of your students are former students of mine. And
yes,
a lot of your yoga tune-up teachers, we travel in the same world.
It's a small little world here in the teaching people self-healing space, and I like my collegiate comradeship. Any of the people who are presenting for you for the seminar, I just think we're filling a void, and it's really cool to be a part of that with you and with some of these other guests that you're having.
Great. So, what does the phrase "be your own healer" mean to you?
Well, I have to let you know that the word healer gives me a really strange reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I work on healing myself, but I certainly don't heal other people. And so I want to start just by disassembling that I don't profess to be a healer, and I just rankle at the thought of people calling me a healer, because what being your own healer means that you are being accountable for your own health and well-being. And that's really the service that I provide people, is I give them ways to self-heal. I point things out. I help them to discover where their own blind spots are. I'm not there necessarily to say, this is broken, this is broken, but to help them navigate through their own tissues so that they discover it themselves, because I feel that when you do that yourself, you're much more empowered. So being your own healer, for me, as somebody who wants to do self-healing for myself, means then actually being accountable for my own stuff as it comes up and doing my research. When I have issues that crop up in my body, I spend a lot of time going online, going through my books, experimenting on my own tissues, consulting with my friends, many of whom are clinicians, consulting with my friends, many of whom are the teachers that I've trained, about what has worked and hasn't worked for them. And then being my own healer means then applying that knowledge to myself, not letting it sort of live in my head, but continuously taking a look at its interrelationship throughout my body and my beliefs. I also think that being my own healer means trying and failing and trying again. I don't think that I would have the success I have with my own issues had I not made a lot of mistakes on myself first, and then regrouped, you know, dusted myself off and then tried a different approach. I think also being my own healer means also knowing when you do need to ask for help, being humble enough and willing to submit to educating yourself in a way that may feel unorthodox or feel kooky, and to let the new methodology, new approach, and new thinking come into my life. And then go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, do you need a label for what you do? Like, do you consider yourself a teacher, a guide, or?
I'm an educator.
Great.
I'm an educator, yeah.
You know, you mentioned two things that I talk about in a lot of my yoga classes. One is the consciousness of the practice, where I teach a lot of anatomy in the course of my classes, and I say, if it interests you, go home and Google it, you know, like, learn about what it is you're trying to learn about, which I don't think enough people really can make. They make their practices conscious. And the other thing is the idea of failing and getting back on your feet, which I think the yoga room in a lot of ways is just one of the best places for people to really process through that kind of stuff.
It's a great laboratory for failure. You're right. And that, I mean, it's one of the way, one of the sort of cognitive, really the way that cognition happens is through making mistakes and then rebuilding a better bridge. So I feel like that happens on a body-wide level as well as doing math with, you know, a pencil and a sheet of paper. So that failure set and the desire to make better, do better, make different choices is that rewiring. And it's so powerful to then break through at that point.
And how has your personal history or past informed what you're doing and led you to where you're, the work you're doing?
My childhood was complicated. I'm sure yours was too. Those of us who help people with pain, I think, probably came from a lot of pain, both on an emotional and physical level. For me, it was in both respects. There was never an accident that I suffered from. There was never an affliction. There were plenty of divorces with my family. I was also kidnapped when I was 6 years old across state lines by a family member. And I think that trauma has never left me. Every time I think about it, it, you know, brings me to my knees. And I think that a lot of the insecurities of home for me during my childhood and the many moves that we made led to some very deep unsettling in my a great dislike for myself. And that translated in my early teens into a series of eating disorders. I was anorexic for many years, and then I was bulimic for many years. And those psychological diseases, which are intense physical diseases, led me to start researching them, the diseases, because I knew I wasn't well. And that just kept opening up different pathways of healing, learning about the body, and also learning what was making me tick, learning what was making me so unhappy and so full of dislike for myself, really. I would say that that's the initiation.
And was that through yoga? Was yoga the first thing that got you started on that path, or were there things that led you to yoga?
My mother brought home two beta videos. I'm 42. Beta was like so cool, right?
Yeah.
And we actually lived off the grid. I lived off the grid in Santa Fe, New Mexico with my mom in a solar home. And so we didn't have good TV reception out there. So we would watch videos. And she brought home the Raquel Welch yoga video and the Jane Fonda workout. And that was when I was 11. And I would do them back to back with her. And those lit me up. That is literally what woke my body up from the slumber of non-movement. I was a kid who played with dolls, and I read all the time, and was played with my dogs, but I was not active at all as a kid. And so these videos they lit me up from inside out. But also that's what began my obsession with my body and with food, and with starving myself.
Wow. And what
so
did you
I
want
learned
to be?
From,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No. Please.
I learned from media. I mean, my initiation into yoga was through media. And then I started getting books from the library, and I got a subscription to Yoga Journal when I was 14. That was like the coolest thing ever, and I just dreamed of being able to do these poses. I was very, very dedicated to learning as much as I could, and I learned it through media, and that's one of the reasons why I make so much media, because that's what woke me up. And I know there's little girls and little boys and moms and dads and grandmas out there who don't have access to teachers and have the potential to live better in their body, and this is the way that I reach them.
That's really great. I think it's an amazing that's just the media concept, I think, is really great. Like, I started my walking program. I teach people to walk, and mostly for pain relief. And I'm in New York, where – so there's someone on every corner to help you and doing really good, even if they disagree with my approach, right? They're doing really good work. And through the media, I felt like, wow, I could really offer something to people in Oshkosh that are in the middle of nowhere. and can get help where they don't have modalities nearby. They don't have chiropractors or Rolfers or people to work with. And I've been so appreciative of the fact of how far you can spread your word in the modern world for people
Absolutely.
Who don't have access. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it sounds like you wanted to do what you've been doing for, like, I started doing yoga at 32 and had no idea I'd be doing this kind of work till I was 40, but it sounds like this is kind of what you wanted to be when you grew up.
I certainly didn't want to be it. I just wanted to
right.
do it. I just wanted to do it. I wanted to be a microbiologist. Are you kidding me? I wanted to discover the cure to AIDS. I was totally on the science track, but at the same time, I very outgoing. I love being in front of people, and I'm a loudmouth, and, you know, all those things. Being behind a microscope was not going to satisfy those urges, and so there were other drives in me that where my talents lay. Does that make sense?
Totally.
And ultimately, I honored them. But I get to talk about microbiology and neuroscience and anatomy and nitty-gritty things in the context of educating people. So I actually get the best of all of it.
That's been an amazing part of these interviews is everyone I've talked to is bringing so much to the table. And I think that's a real benefit of the kind of amorphous nature of being a yoga or asana teacher in the U.S. It doesn't there. You can really bring neuroscience as well as psychology as well as everything else to what you're offering. And it's really been, to me, just inspiring and amazing to hear how many different platforms people are bringing to the one idea of healing.
Absolutely. People can erase their own pain. It's really so accessible to us. We are our own best medicine cabinet, and we have the facility. Sometimes we just don't have the belief that we can do it, and so we give our power to physicians and to other therapists and to just to other people and think that they can take care of us. And that's not It's not correct. It's not. It's really not correct thinking. I think the medical system, and God bless the medical system, they've saved my life before, and my father's a doctor. That helped send me to college. It's wonderful when it's a last resort, when no other things can be done. But the dependency on medications, the dependency on surgeries to fix things that actually could have been prevented had you just been standing well and walking well for the past 30 or 40 years, which is not taught in schools, you're teaching it. I'm teaching it. That's the preventative medicine that I feel all of us can do better, and that we should be doing better. It's our human. We're built that way. We just lost our way.
You know, I'm and I think we kind of share this. I'm very against meds for adults in a lot of ways, and not against, but, you know, that we should be conscious of it. And some people can think, and I'm a bit of a hippie, and I know who I am, but people can think I'm radical in ways, but then I'll tell them the story that my son, when he was born at either like 10 days or 14 days old, it was very intense. We noticed that he was very, really warm. My sister-in-law
mm-hmm.
said, you know, he's a warm baby. And we took his temperature and it was 100, and we didn't even think much, and we Googled, you know, and it said, if your newborn has a 100-degree temperature, get to the emergency room immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we ended up, and he went he was put on every single antibiotic. He
wow.
had an E. coli, and uh-huh. Then we watched them eliminate all the antibiotics as they tried to figure out what it was, and then
oh my God.
He was in the hospital for 10 days, and he was better. So I'm not at all against medicines, because medicines can completely, they fix us, they heal us, they can help us when needed. But then I find that one of the things that I'm trying to tell my clients is nothing is going to fix you but yourself. And I feel like that's what you're just pointing to, this idea that, and what I really love about your work, I love the yoga tune-up balls, because while I love Rolfing and chiropractor, there you are really offering a very specific self-help that you can really get to your own issues.
Absolutely. And I'll just describe what these balls are for listeners. They're They're grippy, pliable rubber balls in different sizes. They have a ton of yield to them, and they have a ton of grip. And so they really, once you get them, and you kind of got to squish them around to develop the grip and the pliability. But once you get using them, they have the texture of human muscle, and so they're able to roll their way into deep crevices around bony prominences that are very hard to get to with harder tools like foam rollers. They have a lot of nuance to them, just like human fingers, can do very, very detailed work. And there's many gifts that they provide, one of which is they help you to become aware of where you have aches and pains. They help you become aware of where you have knottiness in your tissues. And while they're discovering that, it's actually doing something about it. And so it's an awareness tool. It helps you to locate yourself a little bit better. And just knowing that you can do something very quickly about your own aches and pains is very empowering, and it gets you out of that pain. And it sidesteps the need to reach for Advil, because Advil is never going to actually repair your tissue. It's only going to delay healing, whereas improving circulation, improving internal hydration within your own tissues, that is the mechanism for healing and repair.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. I'm working with someone now long distance who broke her femur in half in a car accident.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, I posted the x-ray on Facebook. It was such an intense thing. And I came to this from knee surgeries. I had 3 knee surgeries.
Mm.
I was doing Ashtanga yoga, and sort of apocryphal tale, I met someone who said, "So what are you doing to prevent a 4th surgery?"
Gosh,
And I said, "Ooh, absolutely nothing. Thank you so much." Like, that was my big light bulb moment.
Yeah.
But I found in my knee surgeries that they gave me the painkillers and the opiates that work to numb the pain. But I felt that over the surgeries, I really eliminated. The first surgery, I took some. The second surgery, I took 1 or 2. And the third surgery, I just took none and put up with a little bit of a pain. But I felt like they without the opiates, the healing was faster and improved. And that's a really dicey thing to say to somebody, well, you shouldn't take these things for pain when you're in a lot of pain. But meds don't necessarily encourage healing. They can often, you know, get in the way a little bit.
Yeah, my book, The Role Model, opens with this figure that just blows my brain apart, that the world population, or rather the U.S. population, represents only 4.6% of the total global population, but we consume 80% of the planet's opiates.
Wow.
Yeah. And look, I just had a kid, and they packed some into my bag on the way out the door. Everybody, opiates are so cheap and easy to come by. I don't think that you can ask any person. Everybody knows somebody who is on pain medication as a way of life. It is such an epidemic in this country, and this is something that I'm passionate about addressing, which is that the fact that so many of us are hooked on the meds, I just think it slows down the healing process for all processes, you know, for all people. And we're not really getting a reality check about true self-healing because we keep clouding it. And when I say we, I'm talking about the collective we. I mean, obviously, you're out
totally,
there.
Totally, yeah, yeah.
Brooke's out there, and Katie's out there, and Eden's out there, and we're trying to, you know, make a difference. But the number of students I have who've actually, and I don't start by saying, "Hey, I'm going to get you off of pain medication."
Right.
That's never how I start. I think once you start to feel better, you start to reduce. You start to wean yourself because you realize you have so much more potential, and that you start to feel your own pleasure chest from your movement patterns or from living better, moving more, that you realize that you don't need these other interventions.
Yeah, even in terms of, in terms of pain meds, like in my family, I'm the only person not on some meds or another, and my brother, for for example, is on, you know, like acid reflux meds. And and he'll say, and we'll eat, and I'm like, but you're only on there because you won't change your diet. You know, like if you didn't eat food that gave you heartburn, you wouldn't need to take a pill to relieve the heartburn. But
when you look at the diaphragm and the stomach and that central sphincter, the central tendon, the diaphragm, I think that a lot of our heartburn is weakness in the diaphragm. So okay. I've had a lot of success with my students just with postural alignment and diaphragm exercises, especially the Uddiyana Bandha, or what I call, when I'm teaching non-yoga people, the diaphragm vacuum, to help facilitate full range of motion in the diaphragm.
Right.
And proper tone in the innermost abdominal muscles. I go on and on about this in my Gorgeous video, but I really feel that so many of our, there's a lot of physiological issues that are easily correctable through better movement patterns and better breathing. And while your main drift is core walking and postural improvement through walking, the thing that brought me to the public first was my deep gut work. I started teaching these workshops called Core Integration, the Total Abdominal Awakening, about 14 years ago. I was deconstructing Nali Kriya, the abdominal churning exercise that's this total marquee movement in the yoga space. It's just a bizarre thing where you literally see your abdomen churning like a washing machine. But the key to executing that is you don't have to ever execute that ever, but in order to do
right.
that, you have to learn how your diaphragm behaves. And it's so hidden. It's so bizarre to feel. We mostly only feel it when we have the hiccups, but it's trainable. Just, you know, your breathing's trainable, your diaphragm's trainable. And that I've seen has helped people eliminate their heartburn medication. So I have a handful of students that this happened with. So I don't know if your brother is into improving his posture. Doesn't sound like he's totally.
He listens a little, but it's funny. He's my business partner. So.
Oh, hey, brother. Come on.
He gets it by osmosis.
Got it. If I sit near you, maybe
I'll
feel better.
But I filmed him walking. You know, one of the things we do for my walking program is we do video analysis, so you send me your video of you walking, and I mark it up like instant replay on football. I was filming him for like an ad, you know, to show people how it works. And at one point, I was like, you know, you're walking pretty well. What's going on? And he goes, hey, what do you think? I'm really not listening at all.
Awesome.
And he was not moving as badly, so there is a bit of osmosis, and it kind of rubs off on you.
Well,
yeah.
You know, similarly, my husband is my worst student and, you know, and my dear beloved. I always say you can fix your friends, you can fix your foes, but you can't fix your family.
Right.
But I watch him fix himself. He had 3 knee surgeries like you, and when I first was dating him, and he wasn't a student of mine, by the way, when he didn't come to a class of mine until 6 months into dating. When I was first dating him, he would get down on his knees, but he couldn't flex his knee more than 90 degrees. So it always looked like he was proposing or like he was in a Renaissance play or something like that.
Right.
And then, you know, he started experimenting with the yoga tune-up balls and just went to town on all of the grisly fascia all around his knees. And he's got full range of motion. He squats beautifully now, full squats,
right.
And was able to completely eliminate his knee dysfunction and his knee pain from using these rubber scalpels, the rubber drugs. So much is possible for self-correcting and self-healing, but you do have to have some agency in it. And so just like your brother, you know, it's like being around you enough. We lead by example. You know, you said, you know, are you a teacher? Are you a guide? It's like, I'm an educator, but I lead by example. So me attempting to practice what I preach and to be a student of what I teach, it helps rub off on those around me, my students, my family. It's great.
Yeah, get ready for parenting. I try. My goal is to model, you know. How do you model when it's so easy to say, do this, just do it, you know. But you need to really try to live by example. It's a whole nother ball game.
Well, that's why I titled my book "The Role Model," and it's dedicated to my little girl Lila, so she'll know that while she was growing in my belly, I was trying to model a better baby carriage, better behavior, and started there. You know.
That's great. You know, you also mentioned something that I love, which is, like, you mentioned it in terms of meds, but how, like, someone comes to you and you don't. That's not the first thing you say.
No.
Is get off of meds. But I, like, in walking, in the work I do, is a lot of people show up with orthotics. And, you know, it's all well and good, and people are very attached to their orthotics. And I just and I don't even say it, like, the first time, but I'll blithely say, you know, it's possible you can get rid of those orthotics, but that doesn't mean you're going to do it today, and it doesn't mean you're going to do it in a month. But maybe 6 months from now, when you start feeling changes, you can change. You can get rid of these things that, for whatever reason, your brain does not think you're ever getting rid of.
Mm-hmm. One of my students, and he's actually, his story is in the book. He has a genetic disease called Charcot-Marie-Tooth, also known as hereditary sensory motor neuropathy, and this is a disease you're born with, and it's the most common peripheral neuropathy that there is. It just doesn't have the kind of funding that some other neuropathies have. So people know about muscular dystrophy. They know about multiple sclerosis, but they don't know about Charcot-Marie-Tooth. But what happens is that all the peripheral nerves of the body, that's the nerves in all of your limbs, they start to unmyelinate as you age. And it starts happening, it can start happening at any time. His started unmyelinating around age 6. And when that happens, these nerve endings, they don't fire correctly, and they become pain sensors. And so you just have, you know, millions of these nerve endings that should be doing other things for you, but all they're doing is declaring pain. And so when I met Eric, I met him at age 40. He wore leg braces. He was walking, but not well, Jonathan. You would very much disapprove of his his gait. And the leg braces were there to help him to land with a flat foot, hopefully.
Right.
He dislocated his knees constantly. His feet were completely numb, and all of his toes were curled and hammered up inside of these like ski boot like things that he wore. And he didn't have full use of his thumbs and lots of things. And he's on the highest level of fentanyl that's legal, in addition to oxy and acid reflux medication, urinary incontinence medication, antidepressants. The list is massive. And in the course of, I still work with him. It's been almost, we're going in our 8th year now.
Oh, wow.
But I can tell you, as of year 5, he came in one day and he said, I don't want to wear these leg braces anymore. I never said on day 1, hey, I'm going to get you walking without leg braces. I also never said, I'm going to get you off fentanyl. But within 3.5 years, he was off of fentanyl and off of his acid reflux and off of the urinary incontinence and way down on his antidepressants. And I ended up presenting him as a case study at the Fascia Research Congress in Vancouver a couple of years ago and at the Yoga Therapy Conference in Monterey because of his own agency. You know, we never started by saying, hey, we're going to get you off drugs, we're going to get you out of leg braces, I'm going to have like a miracle cure for you. It was hard work. There was a lot of struggle and strife, and there was a backpedaling, and there was forwardpedaling, and this man is such a role model. And, you know, there's going to be more bumps. There's going to be more falling backwards, but continued growth. It's amazing.
Amazing. Yeah, totally. You know, I know, like, in that context, I'm a cheerleader, you know, and I personally, tough love is not my gig, you know. Where do you fall on that? Are you a cheerleader? Do you push people? Like, how do you?
I think that my students would say that I am very demanding, but very compassionate. I expect a lot because I feel like there's a lot going on in school and education where people are not really expected to maintain their integrity in, you know, performing at, to their optimal potential. So I definitely am, I am exacting, but I'm encouraging. I make it fun, and I make you fall into the learning. So the discovery process is so interesting to my students. I just, I somehow create a craving and a hunger in them, and then they expect more of themselves. You know, I did not know, I did not plan on being an educator. I did not plan on creating an entire program around my methodology, but you know, I have 7 different programs that cover about 200 hours of continuing education. I'm constantly creating more education modules. I love helping people with that process of lighting themselves up from inside out. So that is the kind of teacher that I am. I'm a little bit of a pusher, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It's, you know, it, as you will see soon enough, it all comes back to parenting over and over again. And what you do, what it's very interesting what I do as a yoga teacher and how do I translate that. My son just got a skateboard for his birthday, which is what he wanted.
Wow.
But he's having trouble with it. And then, so he's not using it, you know, and you go back, you go, okay, well, don't use it. You'll use it when you're ready, or you have to try, or let's go right now. We're going outside with the skateboard, and we're going to get on it. And
well, to his credit, it's been a miserable winter out there, hasn't it?
Yeah, totally, yeah, absolutely. but we'll get him on. You know, it's very, it's that kind of stuff is really interesting, and I find that with clients as well, like how attached are you to the success of your clients? Like, do you are you really invested in that, or can you let them
know
what they are?
I love the ones I'm with. So if somebody is humble enough to want to get some learning, you know, in my from my context, it's 100% commitment. I mean, it's 100,000% commitment. There's no, I don't understand not investing fully in your students. And so I expect the same in return. And when students aren't into it, the other thing is like there's a difference between my students in my classroom and then my private students and then the teachers who train with me. And my biggest focus right now is on my teachers and mentoring my teachers and helping to nurture them as professionals and as their own self-healers. The private students I have, there's a different relationship with them. And then the, you know, my classroom students who've been with me forever, that familia, there's a different thing with them as well. And I understand the levels of compliance are different in each category. And so I suppose I adjust my expectations for the context of the different classrooms that I teach. But it's a we're a community. And then there's a flow through those. Some students that have studied with me for a long time, all of a sudden they turn a corner and they're like, I want to be able to teach this. And then they just go to the next level.
Great.
Did I answer your question, or did I just ramble?
Yeah,
through?
No, absolutely, yeah. do you take on the suffering of the people you work with, or how do you protect yourself from taking on too much?
It's an interesting question. I'm a problem solver, so when somebody has a lot of pain that comes to me, stuff that has not been helped by the medical system or has been overlooked by who knows what other systems that they've engaged in. I'll do my research on their issue or their condition, but then I just have to meet them. I have to meet their psyche on the mat. I have to meet their listen to what they're telling me. I mean, each person is so different, but I do fall very much in love with especially my private students because of the intimacy, the immediacy of the feedback back and forth. And the private students I have been with me for years.
Right.
It's such a long-term relationship. So I think in a way you could say I do take it on because I'm so invested in their growth. It is like with healthy boundaries of that. So I don't really dwell on it at night and mull it. But I'll talk stuff out with my husband. And if a dynamic arises, I'll take that to my therapist and ask my therapist, how would you best navigate this or what have you. So it's a deep relationship, and I think that healing happens when you know that somebody cares about you. First you have, and sometimes it takes somebody else caring about you for you to recognize that you care about yourself. But I don't want that to sound like, oh, I'm the healer, because now we're back to question number one.
No, totally, yeah.
But I feel like a lot of my own breakthroughs happened when I saw teachers see me as a more loving person than I could see myself. And they showed me by their actions and by the way they talked to me that I was worth loving. And then I was able to open that door for myself. Yeah.
It's just a beautiful image, the idea of that you're falling in love with your clients, because I think it's very, very real. And the boundaries, personally, it's very hard to do this work well if you don't have those boundaries very, rock solid and set in stone. So you're falling in love on a very, very deep level. It's just not a level where you cross the boundaries. And I find so much in terms of the pain issue in working with people with walking and movement and building core is just that they're being heard for the first time. And that's one of the things that when you're in whatever alternative, quote-unquote, means exactly, when you're coming from an alternative space, you're able to listen differently. And then so many people are just so empowered by someone hearing them for the first time.
Yes.
You can go to a lot of different people that say, well, there's nothing really wrong with you, or, the different approaches to how you're going to get well.
Yeah, the being seen, being heard, and then having new things to try.
Yeah, I find that my work, what I love most about my work is the detective piece. House. Yeah, that's exactly it. One form of that. And do you find that's a piece of what you're doing as well?
Oh, yeah. I'm totally troubleshooting, problem solving, experimenting, listening to my intuition. I don't follow a flow chart when I work with people. I mean, a lot of students of mine or teachers of mine, they're like, well, what are the 7 steps to doing what you do right? It's like, wow, if I could do that, there would be so many more of me. Unfortunately, there is no single entry point. There's about 50 million bazillion different entry points given the moment, given them, given me, given all that. I wish it were so black and white, but it is more than 50 shades of gray, Jonathan. There's more.
No, totally. When I work with yoga teachers and if I'm doing teacher trainings and stuff, and I'm not trying to be harsh, but I look at them and said, I cannot train you to be a teacher, right? Like, if you have to be born with the empathy/compassion to serve people in a certain way. And then for me, it's the detective stuff is purely about trusting intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I really don't believe you can train somebody in terms of that. That ability to work on a deeper level is sort of, you have to trust yourself and then make the most of your training. Does that make sense?
It really does make perfect sense, that trust issue. I totally trust my own intuition, and I also totally trust my ability to link into my own creativity in the moment. It's just I'm sure that when you start teaching, just this something else thing happens, and you can't explain it. It's just this thing that happens when you start engaging in that way, because you're stepping completely into your power, but you're stepping into your power to also to let go, to listen, and to be able to communicate some of the most radical thinking at this high level to that person or to that group that you're working with. And that's a fearlessness. You can't be afraid of your ugliness. You can't be afraid of tripping over your words. You can't be afraid of your own authenticity, frankly. That's a word that gets used a lot, but it's like, I get it. I get exactly what you're saying. And it comes with practice, but you really have to – it's both like embracing a massive amount of ego and letting all your ego go at the same time.
That's really great, yeah. Do you find it easier to help others than to help yourself, or are you pretty good at –
Hell yeah! Oh, my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. Helping other people gets me out of my own head.
Oh, great.
And I think I'm way harder on myself than I am on other people, in a way. Does that...
Absolutely.
That
I'll tell you, some of these questions, I've asked this of everybody, and the answers have been amazing, because some people are like, hell yeah, and the other people are like, what are you talking about? Like, no, you know, and... It's very, very interesting to hear how others deal. I worked in a hospice for a while, and why I ask this is really about hospice. Like, I would watch nurses who that they all they did was care for others and get sick themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that to be just a fairly unbearable dynamic to witness. And so it, from the healing perspective. You know, another question that came up earlier about do you take on the suffering of others? I've always felt my strength was that I don't. And then I was working with this healer, a woman who does LMT, and she, you know, has her hands on my belly for an hour. And she said, I said, oh, yeah, you know, that's what I'm really good at. I don't take on the suffering. And she looked at me and she was like, what are you talking about? You totally do, and you do way more than you realize.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a really eye-opening thing for me. I was like, okay, you know, I can hear that, but that's such an interesting, hard, and difficult thing to navigate in what we do.
You know, I do take care of myself, that's for sure. You know, for me, what I do with the therapy balls, with my own movement practice, is like hygiene. It's the way I brush and floss my body, right?
Right.
I brush and floss my teeth every day, although since having a kid, I've skipped a lot of toothbrushing. And showers and other things. So I can see, and I have so much more compassion for all parents out there. But I still am flossing my teeth every night,
right,
as usual.
Right,
sometimes
right.
I miss that morning brushing because where did the morning go? It's now 2:00. So I ask for all of your forgiveness, and that's why I'm not teaching publicly right now. But I am talking to you.
That's great. Are you finished with your book? Did you finish it?
I am. So we're back and forth now with the editors. So
right.
Most of the draft has been handed in. By the time your folks hear this, it'll all be with them. But it's back and forth for the next couple of months. There's over 1,000 images in the book. Right now there's 110,000 words. I'm sure that will be whittled down, but that's a lot of words, just FYI. That's a lot of words. And the book is a conglomeration of – it's called The Role Model, a Step-by-Step Guide to – Erase pain, improve mobility, and live better in your body. And it's two parts, really. It's actually three parts. I break down the science of the balls. I talk a lot about fascia and give a ton of techniques for using the different yoga tune-up balls for the entire body. And then there are 22 stories from students of mine or from just consumers worldwide who have been using the balls and the techniques for the last however many years and have changed their life, have gotten off of pain medication, have used the balls to heal from trauma, have avoided surgeries. There's even one woman whose dog uses the balls, and she doesn't chew on the balls. She rolls on the balls. She was a rescue dog, and the only thing that will calm the dog down is rolling on the balls.
Wow.
And so, it's so sweet. But, yeah, there's a woman who has been able to completely cure her urinary and fecal incontinence using the yoga tune-up balls. She had Crohn's disease and a series of surgeries that left her with constant leaking. and she's been able to manage her pelvic floor in ways that her physios could not. There's a story of a soldier who was wounded, not in combat, but wounded in basic training, and then further wounded by a series of botched surgeries by Army surgeons, who has been living crippled and in pain for the last 15 years, and he recently burned his cane. There's just amazing stories of people who've taken life by the balls. And
literally.
I cannot wait to share this with everybody, but I'm editing, so we're not quite ready yet.
What is your relationship? We touched on it a little bit, to allopathic medicine in your life and in your practice.
Allopathic medicine. Well, I'll tell you this. I definitely wanted to have a birth in a hospital, and I think that there's just such a large discussion about that in the the birthing community, and a lot of fears in every which way around birthing. But I chose to give birth in a hospital, number one, because I just wanted to make sure that medicine had my back in the event anything went wrong. I'm 42. This is my first child.
Right.
And sure enough, I mean, it was an amazing labor and birth, and I won't bore you with all those details, but, I mean, she shot out of me so fast. You know, I had under 20 minutes of pushing. It was like 18 minutes of pushing. She spent, like, no time in my birth canal, but she had inspired so much meconium. She was one of the highest levels of meconium that you can aspirate, and had I not been at a hospital, we wouldn't have the outcome that we did.
Right.
So I was so relieved that I made that choice. And she's super healthy. She's super, there's nothing going on. But had I not had access to, had she not had the access that she had being at the hospital, things would have been very different. So I love allopathic medicine. Again, my father is an infectious disease doctor.
Oh, great.
He does a type of medicine that, like, if he can't figure it out, you die. It's just bizarre funguses and microbes and icky things that nobody can see. So I'm into it. But what I have issue with is that that's our first resort and not our last resort. So many of our ills are preventable, and they're preventable on a mechanical level, and we are not honoring what our body is built to do. We don't stand correctly. We don't sit correctly. We don't breathe correctly. We don't walk correctly. Those basics, and getting enough sleep, those basics keep so much at bay. And I want people to learn those and do those better so that their life is richer, fuller, and empty of unnecessary pain.
That's great. So just one last question, Jill. What do you, as a takeaway for people, what would be the most important first step someone can take on their road to being their own healer?
Listen. Learn to listen to your body.
That's great.
Learn to listen to what it's telling you.
Thank you so much, Jill.
It's a teachable skill.
It's really great.
I think we've gone deaf.
To ourselves.
Yeah, I think we have. There's so much noise that's clouding our ability to hear what our body is telling us. Yeah, that's the first step. Learn to
love it. Well, thank you so much, Jill. It's really great speaking to you. I'm definitely looking forward to your book.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And for more information on Jill Miller, you can go to her website at yogatuneup.com. Have a great day, everyone.
Bye.